accession number 19057, Reel 3.
Only weapon, Reel 3. What was the condition of Gallenkirchen after the battle?
It was, the town was completely smashed to pieces. Thick mud, about a foot thick everywhere, and continuous rain for 10 days. It was bloody awful. We was glad to get away from it, and when we reached the chateau, that was just about the end of our action. We was pulled out then. Another armoured, American armoured brigade took over from us. 10 days in action is quite a long time for an armoured regiment. So we pulled out and went to a town called Schinnen in Holland, and we stayed there, and that was the first time the regiment had been out of action for any length of time since D-Day, so it was a time for complete reorganisation, and we spent Christmas at this town and had a Christmas dinner and quite a party with the Dutch people, and we had a new lieutenant who we didn't get on very well. He'd come straight from Sandhurst, and he was a bit too keen for our liking. He wanted the tank polished and our webbing polished, and we got our own back on him.
How did you do that?
Hey, well, Eddie's first action was to follow, so he was giving too many orders to us, and then he want brackets put on the thing for machine guns to be mounted on the top of the turret, a thing the regiment had thrown away in Normandy as being absolutely useless because it only attracted snipers for the tank commanders. Anyway, we had Christmas dinner on the 25th, 26th, we relieved the 1318th in the line, and then it started to snow about a foot deep, and we had a few minor skirmishes with the enemy, but we was only firing at them across no man's land and attacking one or two minor villages, and that brought us up to about the 16th of January, when we were engaged in a major attack on Operation Blackcock to take out the Venlo Pocket. We were supporting the 52nd Highland Div, which was their first action. They had actually trained us, the 52nd Lowland Div, they'd actually trained us mountain warfare, and naturally they was put in marshland swamp to their first action to attack. We were attached to them. The other two regiments in the brigade were with the 7th Armoured Div and the 43rd Wessex Div. But our attack started off at the village of Hongham. We crossed a river called the Saffron Beek. Yeah, the Saffron Beek. There was a bridge blown, so they had to put a scissors bridge over this stream, and we were attacked. The road went straight up into a village, but that was mined, and Germans were holding the village, and the road was under fire from anti-tank guns in the village, so we swung right to a big open field that was about 2,000 yards. Then there was a hedge, and the village was in the top left-hand corner. Then after this hedge, the open ground went on for another 2,000 yards, and then there was another hedge, and it sharply up to a hill. Well, we were to go, our trooper tank was to, trooper tanks, four tanks, was to lead the 52nd Lowland Division into the backs of this village, and we were to advance with the infantry in open order, and the our Essex Yeomanry were firing 25 pounders as a creeping barrage. I don't know why it was a creeping barrage on frozen ground, because it done more damage to our infantry than it was doing. All it was doing, making holes in the ground. But we got level with the houses, and then our troop leader and Sergeant Wheeler, who I was in his tank earlier, they broke round to the right to this road going into the top end of the village. They was to go round there, and we was to brass up the back of the houses to let the infantry go in. Looking through binoculars, I thought I spotted, coming 2,000 yards in front, three, they looked to me like track vehicles, come down this slope and go behind this hedge. And I said to Johnny, I think the German tank's just come down. He said, we'll report it back to control and see what they say. So I got back to control that there's three track vehicles at such and such a point, and they come back. They didn't think so. They couldn't see anything. And at that moment, they were tanks, and they started firing at us. My squadron leader got, troop leader got hit, and the sergeant had got hit. One of them got wounded in the troop leader's tank. And they were out on the right because they'd advanced another 500 yards to go in the top end of the village. And then those three tanks turned their guns on us. Now, we were brassing up the back of these houses, so we were just on full elevation. We fired our HE towards them, but we didn't even reach them. They was that far away, but their shells were dropping either side of us, so we went into reverse pretty quick. And we backed up 1,000 yards to our start line. And it was only 2 years ago that I was researching that action, and I got hold of Major Ellis's official history, and he named the tank unit was 501st ABT Panzer Unit, which were Tiger tanks, three Tiger tanks at the top. Now, there were three Tiger tanks left over from the Battle of the Bulge. That's all that survived, the Battle of the Bulge, three Tiger tanks, and they was left with 501st. And they were against us, but Typhoon's got two of them. I never saw what happened to the third.
Did you see the Typhoons get the...
No, I heard them. I never saw them, because when we got back, we were then ordered not to do the tack through the open ground, but to go around the other way and come in the village the other side, which we did, and I remember going through a rhododendron bush area, and chuck smoke into the houses, and the infantry got in. We'd started out at 6 o'clock in the morning, and this was now about 5 o'clock at night when we actually the town was taken. Our troop had been busy all day. There was only two tanks, their corporals and my tank. The other two had been knocked out, so we were left in the village. Then suddenly, 8 or 9 o'clock at night, everybody had buggered off. We was alone in the whole town. We planted ourselves in a cafe in the corner, and we was to stay there the night. And be a back guard, and then we had to take turns outside as guard duty while the others were asleep in this cafe. And about 2 o'clock, no, it was about 1 o'clock, my driver, Bill Kendrick, sitting in the driver's seat. Funny enough, he was a driver. He was about 40. But as a tank driver, he considered himself a non-combatant. He wouldn't get in the tank turret. He wasn't there for action. He wasn't going to take part in any action. He'd drive the tank and maintain it, but he wouldn't engage in any action. He suddenly said, "There's something up the road coming down." Yeah, we flicked on the lights, and there's a couple of Germans coming down with their hands up, surrendering. So took them in the cafe, and everybody was asleep. Then, "What a bloody hell, don't you shut up. Give them a cup of tea and tell them to dust down in the corner." So I was relieved, and I think it was our second tank who was on duty about 6 o'clock in the morning. He come in and shouted us, "Here, come and have a look at this." And there was about a 5 foot jock marching in with about 40 prisoners, and he come to us and said, "Got anything to drink?" We said, "Yeah, there's some snaps in here, just what I bloody well wanted. It's been freezing cold all night." Give him snaps, and he was giving his Germans with Ashto and standard attention. And so we handed our two prisoners of war. They're the first two I'd taken prisoner, and being new to the game, I hadn't searched them, so somebody else had their wallets and their wristwatches, but I was new to the game. I didn't know you searched them first. Anyway, he marched them off at 6 o'clock in the morning with half a bottle of snaps in it. He was singing "I Belong to Glasgow" as he marched these Germans out down the village. We were then ordered on the radio to catch up with the rest of the squadron at Bocket, which they'd engaged in a night operation. We could see the, guns had been going all night, and we could see the searchlights playing on the clouds. And then we engaged in taking the town of Heinsberg, the first major town after Geilenkirchen, taken in Germany. And one of the reports here from Johnny Lanes, he got the military medal, because there was open ground between Heinsberg, between us attacking Heinsberg, and he shot across, and they was firing back at him, but he took quite a risk. Well, I always remember Heinsberg. We first thing we do, entering the town, to spot the church steeple, and if we're not TNA-ing our guns, we're firing at any German snipers in the church steeple. We say it's we're adjusting our guns to see if they fire correctly. But it's also to see if there's any snipers there.
Would that be a kind of official procedure to do? Or would that
it was our official procedure. And because we'd taken the town was taken, we would stay there for about a week or so. But
any incidents that occurred during the taking of the town?
Yeah, I remember somebody reported a .5 bullet that went through a Sherman tank armour. Oh, bloody hell, we've only got 10 bloody cans around us. And then another time, one of the houses had a chicken coop with about six chickens in it. And being new to the game, we tried to shoot them, so we had chicken for dinner. But you can't shoot a chicken, it moves about so quick. So some bright spark had chucked a hand grenade in, and so we got no chicken. But it was no civilians there at all. The place was deserted, so we had roaring fires going. We was there about a week. That was the end of January. They were, it was earmarked for the Rice World do. So we left there beginning of February, and it was some hectic journey going from Heinsberg right away up to Nijmegen again. Stopped halfway at the pit head bars for a meal. And
what happened there?
Well, it's quite amusing there. The pit head showers, they decided that they would issue the British Army with clean clothing and have a pit head showers. Actually, we haven't had a wash for about a couple of weeks, and they had a proper bath. So we went into pit head showers, stripped off, had a shower, dashed down the corridor, chuck your towels on the heap, and there's a bench down the bottom where you get new clean clothes issued. We get there, and suddenly it's a big long bench all manned by Dutch women. We're all dashing in there naked. And then you had to go to eat different person each time for a pair of socks, undershirt, pants, shirt, and it was quite amusing. I later found that Guards Arm and 43rd Wessex Division have all been viewed by these 20 or 30 Dutch ladies in the nude. But quite amusing. Then we was back on the road again, and that journey back all seemed very hilarious. Everybody was in a good mood, and everybody cracking jokes, and we was all on the AFN network the whole of the journey. And but it was frosty, and every intersection there was a military police directing us on the road, and sometimes you miss the lights, tail lights in front, or the signal, and you're at full speed and you spin round in a circle, or you end up in ditches. But it's a whole night journey from started just as it began night, and we got in Nijmegen, I think it was the 8th of February, not in Nijmegen, to this place in front of the Reichwald Forest where we was to engage in what they called the pepper pot, fire a barrage into the Reichwald, open of the Reichwald attack, and every tank lined up, and from 7 till 9 o'clock we fired about 250 rounds into directed elevations and that into the Reichwald Forest.
What type of charges were you firing?
Those are tank rounds, high explosive. The 17-pounders couldn't fire because the Canadian service people hadn't delivered any high explosive to the 17-pounders. So they only had... They delivered two lorry loads of armour piercing, which were no good. They were just solid shot. The last few rounds we up to our guns full elevation and just fired them at random. 9 o'clock until about 12, we then packed up, cleaned our tank out, cleaned our guns out, and got ready to move off and link up with Echelon to refill with ammunition, fuel, and have a meal. And then by 6 o'clock in the evening, we went into Nijmegen and linked up with the infantry who were to ride on the backs of our tanks overnight to attack the town of Cleve, which was a further 10 miles. The orders were the town would be taken by the 15th Scottish. We were to follow the 15th Scottish into Cleve, and by the next morning be ready to break out of Cleve in the direction of Gok. Things never work like that. We left at 7. It was already getting dark. went about 5 miles and then come to a full stop. And the 15th Scottish have only got one brigade forward. Two brigades were strung right along this one road, and there we were. One division tried to get through another division, and the Canadians were on the left, and that was the only road, and the Canadians as well trying to use this as one hell of a traffic jam all the way along. But we were supposed to be in this an assault tank unit. We were to ordered anything in our way, push them aside. We had to get through. So we got as far as, went through Nuttenden, Cranenberg, and then it was hopeless going past Cranenberg. It was completely blocked. And during the route, the Germans were shelling the road. It was drizzle, icy cold. Infantry on the backs of our tank were brewing up dixies of tea in the turret. And about 2 or 3 in the morning, my troop of tank was leading, and we had another troop, a third troop, as well in the lead tanks. We decided to try a route through the Reichwald Forest, which was either side of us. And some fire breaks, just wide enough for a tank to go down. So we turned right, and Lieutenant Gager, I think it was, led our tank on foot down this fire break. He'd lead a couple of tanks on foot, and then if it was all right, the others follow on by radio. And we went on for till about 3 o'clock in the morning, I think it was. And then we come to a German defended position. It was just towards the edge of the Reichwald. There was a... it was all pitch dark, and then suddenly illuminated with gun flashes. And then we come to this defended position, which was like a gamekeeper's house. And Germans were firing back, so we just lined up and just blasted the place off out of existence. And two troops back with the infantry was one of our Sherman bulldozers, who had to come up and fill in the shell holes. And our troop leaders had to lead our tanks across this area with torchlight. And I was getting sniped at the time, but we got through past this place about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I must have dozed off then, because next thing I woke, it was getting daylight, about 6 o'clock in the morning. We was approaching the outskirts of Cleve. So we drove into Cleve. Nijmegenstrasse, the street was called. We all lined down this street. Come on the radio, town's taken by 15 Scottish. Have breakfast, have a brief sleep, and prepare to move at 9 o'clock in the morning. We proceed as original orders. Well, I jumped down, and my turn to make breakfast, so goes to the back, and there's supposed to be a ration book, so I kept all our plates and that in. That had disappeared, I reckon. The infantry we had carried had taken it off, as thinking it was water bombs in it. And I've a couple of houses, I went in one, but everything was smashed to pieces. There was a camera hanging on the door, which I thought was handy. Went into another, got some knives, plates and that, and I also captured a chicken in the garden, and thought, well, we'd do well this morning. Just coming out, and then all hell lit loose. We'd been mortared, machine gunned and fired at, and It was apparent we had broken through into the town of Cleve and it was still being defended, and the Germans had just turned their guns around and were firing us, because my tank had been the lead tank, was the first one to get knocked out, and I got back to the tank. The Dixie at the back of the tank was still alight, boiling the tea, but the other two of the crew got round, "Where the bloody hell have you been?" And I just got to get some plates and that so we can have breakfast. And then the tank suddenly was jumped back about 2 foot, and it had been hit by an 88, and our co-driver was still asleep inside it, and he was killed. But the second shot, one in the straight through the front, another one went straight by the co-driver's hatch, and one went in and ricocheted up and straight up through the roof where I would have been sitting if I'd been in the tank. But we all dive for cover then, and we've during the day, more knocked out crews got into the basement of the house.